We are now under 3 weeks away from Bad Blood. And tonight was all about promoting some of the key matches anyway of Bad Blood. And what WWE did tonight was they gave us a very good show. A very good episode of Raw carried not so much by the matches, but it was carried by the promos and the angles. Now, I say it wasn't carried by the matches. That is to take nothing away from Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill, who were on the show tonight. Io Sky and Kairi Sane, also on the show. Bianca was supposed to wrestle Kairi. Kairi still has stitches in her eye from the injury many weeks ago. And so Io said, why don't you wrestle me? When Bianca said, hey, I don't duck a challenge. I'll take you on. And Io said, challenge accepted. And so we had Bianca Belair one-on-one with Io Sky, and the two of them went out there tonight and had a banger of a match. I don't think I've ever seen the two of them have a bad match before. So you can add tonight to the pile. They had a great match, easily the best all night. But we had CM Punk back tonight for the first time since he was attacked. He was laid out by Drew McIntyre a couple of weeks ago. That was when Drew McIntyre fed him his bracelet. Remember Bracelet Gate? I talked about Bracelet Gate on the podcast this weekend. If you want to go check that out on episode 879. The bracelet is no more. CM Punk was there tonight. He was not smiling. He was not in a jovial mood. We did not get CM Punk coming out there and talking about how all the fans here tonight, all the people that packed the building, it's so great to be back here in WWE. It's great to be back here in front of all... No, we didn't get that CM Punk. We didn't get pandering Punk. We got a very serious, deathly serious CM Punk tonight, letting Drew McIntyre know that he is willing to die inside Hell in a Cell at Bad Blood. That's exactly the kind of thing that you want to hear when you're going into a Hell in a Cell match. You want a serious promo. You want a serious situation here. And that's what we got tonight from CM Punk. A serious approach to what will be the blow-off battle between Punk and McIntyre in 3 weeks. We also had Jey Uso and Bron Breakker. They went face-to-face. They're going to be wrestling next week for the Intercontinental Championship. That was good stuff. And this was the most overt tease of a New Day split that we have had yet, as they challenge the Judgment Day tonight for the tag team titles. Do we have new tag team champions? We do not. But what we have is Trouble in Paradise. See what I did there? Kofi Kingston, anyway. So we're going to talk about all that and a lot more, including Monster Madness, Part 2. We had a sequel tonight with Braun Strowman and Bron Breakker. Or Braun Strowman and Bronson Reed. Too many fucking Brons on this show. Braun Strowman and Bronson Reed. There we go. I forgot. We had Braun, and Bronson. It was Braun and Bronson. This is your Monday Night Raw review for September 16th, 2024. 2 weeks after he was left for dead by Drew McIntyre and he ate a mouthful of his own bracelet, CM Punk opened the show tonight, and he did not look happy. He was very grim, very solemn. He said that he's at this point now in his career where people ask him, how many matches does he have left in those old bones of his? The answer is, way more than you think. The only way to end this between him and Drew is inside Hell in a Cell, which was made official last week by Adam Pearce. He said he feels a little naive thinking that this was over before he just because he touched four turnbuckles in Berlin. As was Drew. He was very naive to think that it was over after he dragged Punk's wife and dog into this mess. And Punk said he's just too damn stubborn. He said Drew's fatal mistake in all of this was not getting the job done, but things are different now. It says people can ask him, how many Hell in a Cell matches does he have left in him? And the honest answer is zero. He said that his sister has asked him not to do this. His wife has asked him not to do this. And he looked like he was about to break down crying. His eyes were welling up. And I tell you what, as he was talking here, and he said, you know, how many Hell in a Cell matches do I have left in me? And he said, zero. And then I saw him, you know, getting very emotional. I thought for a second that he was about to tell us he was injured again. I swear to God. I thought he was about to tell us that he tore something, he broke something, he was hurt. This is what you have to worry about with CM Punk. He's coming off some very significant injuries. That's why I have a counter. We're going to bust it out again in Bad Blood, the counter. How many matches has CM Punk had injury-free? The counter is up to 2 right now. He made it through SummerSlam in Berlin. But this is what you have to do. Because as he's gotten older, you know, and he's got this injury history, he's torn both, you know, triceps now in the last couple of years, you got to worry. Every time he gets in the ring, is he going to make it out in one piece? Thankfully, that's not what he was here to announce. But he was saying his sister, his wife, they don't want him to get inside Hell in a Cell. His wife, by the way, for those of you who don't know, AJ Lee was interviewed by comicbook.com in the past week or so. And she was asked about Punk and his storyline with Drew McIntyre and the bracelet and everything. And according to AJ, she does not watch. She does not really pay any attention to any of this. And I think she said it's more to do with her just being worried. She doesn't want, you know, anything to happen to him. But if you take her at her word, she's not paying attention to any of what's going on. So it's not like she's there watching the show every week and intently following the storylines. She's really out of the loop on all this stuff. Punk said, allow him to explain why he is going to do this. The last time he was in Portland, which is where they were tonight, he told Drew, if he pushes him far enough, he can become the devil himself. And now the devil is here. The devil is in his heart, and the devil tells him the only way this ends is inside Hell in a Cell. He can't promise that he won't kill McIntyre, but he promises he's going to make him bleed. And he promises Drew is going to have to kill him because he is prepared to die. He had a great career, and if this is the end, then so be it. He's prepared for this to be the end of CM Punk, and if Drew is prepared for this to be the end of Drew McIntyre, and he got super close up to the camera, he said, then I'll see you in hell. He spoke very quietly in this promo, very deliberately to make you, you know, lean in to really hear what he was saying. And he struck, I thought, the perfect tone here for what he was going for in this promo. He was deathly serious when he talked about, you know, McIntyre, I'm willing to die inside the cell. And he also promised, and this is key, he promised to make Drew McIntyre bleed. Now, when you're a babyface and you go out there, especially before a big match, big pay-per-view match, and you make a promise, you need to deliver on that promise. Punk is not going out there and promising the fans that he is going to make Drew McIntyre bleed unless Drew McIntyre, if not Punk himself, is going to bleed. So that was the surest sign yet that we are going to get blood inside Hell in a Cell, which I think is great. Because if ever there was a match in the course of the calendar year in WWE, which does not do blood, WWE does not do blood very often. Not that it doesn't happen. We just had Cody bleeding in the cage against Solo Sikoa on Friday, whether it was intentional or not, I'm sure it was. But it's just not something we see nearly as much as we see, for example, in AEW, which we see every single week. But I always said, you know, if you were going to have blood, Hell in a Cell is the time to do it, or really any cage match, but Hell in a Cell is where you would want to have some blood. Because I think a little bit of blood in wrestling in a match like that makes sense. It's not the sort of thing you want to overdo. It's not the sort of thing you want to abuse. But if ever there was a time for it, a blood feud like this, Hell in a Cell is the time to do it. And the fact that he went out of his way there to tell us that tells us that we're going to get blood at Hell in a Cell. And also, this is the match that needs to close the show. I said that last week. I'll say it again here. Could end up being Cody and Roman against the Bloodline, but Hell in a Cell is what should close out the show on October 5th. Punk, by the way, is going to be on NXT tomorrow night. We're going to find out what he's going to be doing on that first NXT on CW show in Chicago on October 1st. My guess is we probably see him as a special referee. Maybe for the Roxanne Perez-Julia match for the NXT Women's Championship. We had Sheamus against Pete Dunne. Before the match, Kathy Kelly interviewed Sheamus at the gorilla position backstage. And he said that Dunne really hit him where it hurts. Not because he smashed his hand or he smashed his back, but because he took his dream away from him. The one mountain Sheamus had left to climb was to become Intercontinental Champion, which would make him, and this is what he said, Okay, I'm only repeating what he said here. This would make him the first ever Grand Slam champion in WWE. He didn't say the first Irish-born Grand Slam champion. He said the first Grand Slam champion, which is obviously not true. Clearly he misspoke. But now it was time to inflict pain on his protege. Said Pete Dunne hates it when people call him Butch. Tonight, Dunne would become his Butch. So a couple minutes into the match, Dunne placed Sheamus' hand on the ring steps. He tried to stomp them. Sheamus moved his hand, and then he hit an Alabama slam on the lid of the announce desk. That took us into a commercial break. There was a spot where Sheamus power slammed him off the middle rope for a near fall. Dunne, from the ring, because he's down on the mat, and he reaches outside, you know, over the apron, reaches outside, and he grabs a shillelagh. Sheamus, though, hits him with a knee strike, knocks it out of his hand. Sheamus then picks up the shillelagh, and he goes after Pete Dunne, but the referee takes it away from him. As this was happening, Dunne grabs a cricket bat from outside the ring and very gently whacks Sheamus in the shoulder with it. And the referee, of course, was still clearing the shillelagh out of the ring, so he didn't see any of this. Dunne then got back in the ring. He hit Sheamus with a brogue kick of his own, which Joe Tessitore did not pick up on that, but that's what it was. And Pete Dunne pinned him to win the match. I thought it was a good match. Good to see Pete Dunne also picking up a win. It was a good match until the shit finish. I know why they did it, but I didn't like the finish. It also didn't help that the cricket bat shot looked very weak. And Dunne may have felt the same way, and maybe that's why he followed up with the knee strike. Now, I don't know. Maybe that was always the plan for him to do his own bro kick there, whatever it was, knee strike, kick, whatever it was. Whatever the case may be, maybe it was intended. Maybe it wasn't, because he also felt like, that didn't really look good. Let me throw a little something extra in there. But in any event, it's a good thing he did, though, because had they left it alone with the cricket bat shot, that would have made it worse. Outside of the finish, though, I thought they had a good match. Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. And I'm going to talk about Tessitore later on in the show, by the way, because I thought this was his best job yet tonight. So we'll talk about Joe a little bit later, because this was week three, I believe. And yeah, I said in week one, because he wasn't at his best in week one. I mean, there were matches where he was very, he's very quiet and you really had to listen to hear him. Last week was better. This week was better than the week before. And I said at the beginning, it'll take a little bit of time, but I think that in him, they found someone who could be rock solid in that announce position, because they've been through so many people before this: Jimmy Smith and Adnan Virk and Kevin Patrick, and just none of them stuck. I think this will stick. I think in him, they found somebody that they can rely on, who's got the voice and has the product knowledge, and now you're starting to see that, bear some fruit. We'll talk more about him later. Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley, they were walking in the back. Where are we? Are we only at 270 likes? We got over 900 people in here and counting. Let's get those likes up. Come on. I know you can do better than that. Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley were walking in the back when Jey Uso approached them, and Jey said that he knew Priest wouldn't ask, got too much pride, but he would have eyes on Damian's match with Dominic later tonight, because, the Judgment Day, they're always lurking around. Xavier Woods showed up and said that he knows he hasn't seen eye to eye with Priest and Ripley in the past, and he said that he and Kofi tonight, they have a tag team title match against the Judgment Day. And they want to go it alone. So he's putting them all on notice. So I don't want your help. We got to do this by ourselves. And Priest said that he can respect that. He told Woods to go beat their asses and take their titles. Can't put it any simpler than that. We had Natalya one-on-one with Zoe Stark. Natty, for those of you who missed it, on the show last week, she returned in Calgary. First match that she had since signing her new deal, because she is staying with WWE. Never really thought that she was going to leave anyway. But she returned last week, picked up her first win in a long time in that six-woman tag team match. Here, her and Zoe, they traded roll-ups and pin attempts until Natty tried for a sharpshooter. Zoe avoided it, and Natty got the win with another roll-up. Eventually, you know, one roll-up was bound to win. And so that's how she picked up the win. That is now 2 weeks of losses here on this show for the Pure Fusion Garbage Collective. So they haven't been together officially for very long, but doesn't bode well for them. But it's now a 2 week win streak for Natty, and I'm going to throw a stat at you that you may or may not believe. I guess it's not that hard to believe, given that it's Natalya. She's been around for a very long time and hasn't really been focused on, but this is an incredible stat, I thought. Tonight was Natty's first singles win on Monday Night Raw since August of 2020. And that was a count-out win over Mickie James. It wasn't even like a pin or a submission in the sharpshooter. August of 2020, her first singles win on this show in 4 years. That's one hell of a drought. So she's back to her winning ways, right? She's back on the winning path. Good for her. Backstage, Finn Balor crashed an interview that Kathy Kelly was conducting or trying to conduct with Rhea Ripley, wearing his new Street Trash t-shirt, by the way. Balor told Ripley that she's just as bad as Damian Priest. Said that Rhea told them that they were a family, but she only cared about herself. Ripley said that she wouldn't let Balor rewrite history and lie to her face. She said they were a family and she had to stop them from fighting every week and did so because she loved them. She loved the family. Balor told Ripley that when Liv Morgan was flirting with Dominic, he was the devil on Dom's shoulder, telling him to go with Liv. So Jey Uso showed up and asked if there's a problem here. And Balor said, no, it was just two friends catching up. And Balor said that Jey should focus on the Intercontinental title because he's a little out of his league when it comes to Rhea Ripley. Ripley said Balor might have a point after he walked away, and now she's talking to Jey, and she says that Balor might have a point. And Jey wondered if she meant that, what do you mean by that, that I'm out of your league? And Ripley said no, and said that he should focus on becoming the Intercontinental champion. There's a little bit of flirting action going on here. A little bit of flirting going on between Jey Uso and Rhea Ripley. Rikishi is at home throwing furniture around. I fully expect Rikishi is going to show up on Raw next week with a cross in his hand and some holy water to throw on Rhea, telling her to stay away from him. He's a married man. So Jey was out to the ring after this to talk about his Intercontinental Championship match, which we now know is going to be taking place next week on Raw. That should be the main event with Bron Breakker. So the fans yeeted after every line. He would say a few words, they would go yeet. He would say a few more words, they would go yeet. It got very old very fast. So Bron Breakker interrupted, made his way to the ring wearing a new jacket that made him look even more like his father, because it's exactly the same kind of jacket that Rick used to wear to the ring all the time. Breakker said that Jey is trying to prove that he doesn't need any help to be a single star. And he said that he did his homework. Jey has been with the WWE, he said, for 14 years. And the fans love him. And Breakker said, the funny thing is that he, being Breakker, has done more as a single star in 6 months than Jey Uso has done his entire career. But Braun said, I didn't need my dad. I didn't need my uncle. I didn't even need to use the family name. Said he did it all by himself. He didn't need any help at all. He told Jey that he would expose him because Jey is nothing without his family. So Jey took his shades off at that point. He actually got serious for a change. And he said that he wouldn't take Breakker lightly, but he's only been there for 6 months. And Jey said that he was winning championships in WWE for 14 years while Braun was still in diapers. I don't think the math quite is mathing on that, but well, it sounded good. Jey said that he would dog walk Breakker's ass. Then he said that he would find out what Breakker is made of and said that it might be short and sweet like Breaker's NFL career. Everybody went, ooh. And Braun, oh, he was all fired up by that. He got hot over that line, and he looked like he was ready to explode. So he turned away like he was about to leave. Then he turned back. He dropped Jay with a punch. Breaker ran the ropes for a spear, but Jay beat him to it. And Joe Tessitore said that it was the first time that Braun had been taken down by a spear. Usually he's the one dishing them out. And Jay held up the Intercontinental title to end the segment. I am not surprised that they are doing this match on TV next week instead of Bad Blood. They've already got six matches, either booked or looking official. I think if you throw in Gunther and Sammy, if it happens there, that's six matches that would be for Bad Blood. Triple H has been doing five on most of these shows. SummerSlam had seven. But on almost every other show that's not WrestleMania or the Royal Rumble, he keeps it to five matches. It's not going to kill him if he does six. I hope he realizes that. Six is okay. Six, by the way, just remember, is the time that Bad Blood starts as well. 6 p.m. Eastern is the start time for Bad Blood. They're trying not to overlap with the UFC pay-per-view that night. That's why it's starting earlier. So just FYI. So I understand why this match wouldn't make the card. I mean, certainly if you have the option of this or Gunther and Sammy for the world title, you're going to put your world championship match on that show. But if this is going to be on Raw next week, I hope that they're going to close the show with it. It should get the main event spot. You could argue that this match should have gotten time on the PLE instead of Balor and Priest, which is not for a championship, but that match has so much more history behind it. You know, and a lot of these shows, including tonight, they're closing the shows with, you know, Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley and the Judgment Day. It's a bigger deal. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's a bigger deal than the Intercontinental title right now. So I get it. I get that match being on the Bad Blood card and not this one. And as far as the other thing I wanted to talk about, I get that the Yeet stuff is over. And good for Jay. Now he's got Yeet merch and Yeet shades, and he's one of the top merch sellers in the company, and I don't have any issue with that. And the fans love doing it. But I wish we would get more Jay Uso promos like the one we got here when he took the shades off. And he got serious, and he was actually able to talk kind of like a badass, you know, and he was able to talk like a normal human being. Instead of being, you know, a cartoon character where he can only get a few words out and he has to wait for everybody to go yeet at the end of every sentence. These are the kinds of promos I would like to see more of from him because he's actually very good at them. You know, when he gets a little more serious like this, he's actually very good at them. We don't get to see it very often, but we got a little glimpse of it here. But I thought this was a really good segment and it got me hyped up to see their match. Jay is not going to win the Intercontinental title next week, but we are getting closer to Survivor Series. You know, we're only 2 months away, and I talked a little bit about this in my SmackDown post show on Friday, that I still think we're going to get some form of Bloodline versus Bloodline of War Games, but I'm starting to wonder because Survivor Series is not that far off, and I think to tell the stories they need to tell about how Roman gets back together with the Usos to get them on the same side, are they going to have enough time? You know, 2 weeks? And it's October already. You know, and it just feels like it's coming up pretty quick, and there's been no indication at all that Jay is about to rejoin his family members in that story. I mean, it's just they've done nothing in that direction. But I do wonder if we might see Jimmy Uso next week. You know, not that he's going to interfere in the match, but if Breaker was to attack Jay when the match was over, could we see Jimmy show up? Could we see Jimmy try to help his brother? Jimmy is aware of what's going on Friday nights, and maybe in Jimmy's mind, he wants to try to bring Jay back into the fold and say, bro, look at what's going on here over on SmackDown, man. I need you. I need you back with me. I don't know. I don't know if that's what they're going to do. Maybe they're just going to save Jimmy for a SmackDown return because that's the last time we saw him, right? He was taken out by the Bloodline. But that'll be something to watch for next week. Because, again, they're going to have to get something going soon. If Jay is going to be part of that story going into War Games, they've got to do something soon. And I've been trying to, like, think, okay, how do they go about doing this? Maybe that's one way. Maybe the reason we haven't seen Jimmy yet is because Jimmy's going to show up on Raw before he goes back to SmackDown. We have the New Day against the Judgment Day. A lot of day. It's Monday for the World Tag Team titles. The first sign of New Day not being on the same page together, Kofi Kingston was out there wearing green. Xavier Woods was out there wearing all black. That should have been the first sign of trouble. Kingston hit Balor with an SOS. Woods made the hot tag to run wild on JD McDonagh. Kingston and Woods knocked Balor out of the ring. Kingston then dropped him with a flip dive out to the floor. Woods gave McDonagh a sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. And sure enough, here comes the Judgment Day. Liv Morgan, Dominic Mysterio, and Carlito out marching to the ring. Woods looked confused when he suddenly saw the LWO coming out behind them, and the LWO goes and attacks the Judgment Day, trying to even out the odds. As the teams were brawling, Woods superkicked McDonagh. Kingston wiped out the Judgment Day and the LWO with a trust fall dive out to the floor. Woods hits JD McDonagh with that springboard elbow he does from the top rope, and he covers him, but there's no referee. The referee is preoccupied on the outside of the ring with Kofi, trying to pull Kofi off of the Judgment Day members because he's fighting with them. Meanwhile, Woods is in the ring like, dude, he's got like a 10 count, right? He's got the visual pin. He's got the titles won. He's got the match won. But there's no referee. And so Woods goes to grab the referee. The crowd starts chanting, "Ref, you suck." Woods tried to roll up McDonagh, but Balor had already blind tagged himself into the match. And the referee wouldn't count because the referee knew that McDonagh is no longer the legal man. Woods didn't know that. Instead, McDonagh grabs Woods. He falls backwards, takes him down to the mat. He's holding him. He's restraining him. And Finn Balor comes off the top rope with a double stomp to Xavier Woods. And then he pins him to retain the titles. And that, by the way, that fulfills the quota, the Judgment Day quota of one title defense every couple of months. So I hope you enjoyed it, because it might be a while before we have another one. After the match, Kingston tried to console Woods. Woods brushed him aside. He was very frustrated. And he didn't push him, but he just kind of brushed him aside. And he said something had to change. Something has to change. He was just completely flummoxed by this. This was the closest that we have come yet to a New Day split. I thought maybe he would shove Kofi down here in a fit of rage and then walk off, but Woods left without incident. In the back after, Kathy Kelly tried to interview Kofi Kingston, but he heard, and we could all hear, Xavier Woods was around the corner yelling at somebody, and so the cameras followed, and Kofi went, and he finds Woods, and he is admonishing the LWO. "What were you guys doing? It's your fault. You cost us the titles. Why did you come out there? I didn't want anybody involved." And blaming them for the loss. Kofi then reveals to Woods that, "I'm the one who asked for their help. It was me." And Woods is like, "Why?" And Kofi explained that, you know, they needed help because Woods was like, all of a sudden we need help after all these years. And Kofi said, "Look, we never needed help before because we had Big E. Okay, we had E. Now we don't have E. It's just you and me." And Woods took that to mean that they weren't good enough to win without, without Big E. Kingston said, "That's not what I meant." And Woods wondered, why was it that the LWO knew about this? You told them. You had a plan with them. So they knew to come out, but you didn't tell me. Like, I'm your partner. I'm your friend. You didn't tell me, but you tell them. And he was very upset that this has been a recurring theme of late, where Kofi seems to leave him in the dark, and he doesn't know what the hell's going on anymore, and then he just stormed off. This was great. I thought this segment here, this was great. It is still hard for me to sit here and imagine that they are going to actually go ahead and split the New Day before we get to their 10-year anniversary in November. I hadn't realized until a couple weeks ago that November is going to be 10 years since the New Day was formed. Now that we're this close, I'm not saying there won't be a split. There very well could end up being a New Day split. But to do it before the 10-year anniversary, that I just don't see. I think what they're going to continue to do is tease it. We're going to continue to get more teases like this every single week until we get there. And it's, to me, it's almost a slam dunk guarantee that at some point soon, in the very near future, we are going to see Big E back on TV. We're not going to see him back in the ring. I don't think that we're going to see Big E back in the ring ever again. But we're certainly not going to see him back in the ring now. But we will get him back on TV. There's no reason that you can't have Big E on the show. I mean, he's been name dropped now. The New Day is on the verge of splitting up. If ever there was a time to trot him out there on TV and involve him in this storyline, this is it right here. And I think we're going to get Big E on TV to try to get them back on the same page and try to repair the relationship and get the New Day back on solid ground. So to me, this is the most interesting that the New Day has been in years, because the New Day has just been sort of floundering around, nothing really to do, nothing of any note, nothing of any real substance. Big E not being there has not helped. He was sort of, in many ways, the glue that held that group together. And the most charismatic, and they're all charismatic, but the most charismatic of the trio was Big E. And he just hasn't been involved at all, not even in a managerial role or a coach, or, you know, like a cheerleader. We just haven't seen him. And it has felt like something is missing. Of course, you had Odyssey Jones for a cup of coffee came in and looked like Odyssey Jones was going to take the place of Big E in a way. And now it's like, Odyssey who? The way he just vanished off the face of the earth, that we still haven't gotten any kind of official explanation. Everybody, you know, ran wild with theories about what it was, and we still don't know for sure. Boy, he just up and vanished. No mention, no word, no nothing. But what they're doing now with the New Day, and you'll notice we didn't see the Final Testament tonight, because they've been involved. They were involved with these guys for months, and there was no Final Testament. There was no Karrion Kross or, you know, anything like that. Fine with me. I don't think this story really needs them at this point. I think Karrion Kross served his purpose. His purpose was to plant the seeds of doubt in the mind of Xavier Woods and get the ball rolling down the hill. That's what he did. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. If any of you have a dog, then you know what it's like to have to walk the dog. And if you walk your dog, you probably walk them with a leash. Now imagine going online with that ExpressVPN. It would be like walking your dog in public without a leash. Most of the time, you'll probably be fine. But what if one day your dog wanders off? What if CM Punk is walking Larry one day with no leash, and Drew McIntyre drives by and dognaps him? Because that's really all that's left in their feud, is to have McIntyre dognap Larry, chain him to the radiator, and make him watch Jack Perry matches. That's what it's like using the internet with that ExpressVPN. It would be like being chained to a radiator, watching Jack Perry matches all day long. You don't want that. Nobody wants that. Every time you connect to a network that has no encryption, which really could be anywhere in public, your online data is not secure, which means any hacker on that network can easily access and steal your personal data. They could do it with their eyes closed. It doesn't take much technical know-how, especially when you assume they probably do this sort of thing every day. Those same hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling their personal data on the dark web. Scary, isn't it? ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure tunnel between your device and the internet. What makes ExpressVPN the best VPN is that it's easy to use. Just pull up the app, you click one button, and you're protected. It also works on all of your devices, including phones, laptops, tablets, and smart TVs. There's a reason why ExpressVPN is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. You know, when I was in Tampa earlier this year for the Royal Rumble at our Airbnb, I'm away from home, I made sure that I had my ExpressVPN app on my phone and on my laptop because I wanted that peace of mind knowing that I was protected. I don't just have podcast-related files saved on there. I have a lot of personal information also. I do my online banking on there. I needed to know that my devices were safe. And they were. It's a safety issue. Again, you may be fine without it, but why take the chance? Why put yourself in a situation that you don't want to be in? And when it happens to you, you'll be left kicking yourself that you didn't take that extra step to avoid a catastrophe like that. It's just not worth the risk. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. Because up next, we had Braun Strowman. This is one of my favorite parts of the show. Braun Strowman against Bronson Reed. Godzilla versus King Kong, the sequel. Can the sequel top the original? It's a rare thing. It has happened before, right? The Godfather. Terminator. Right? T2. One of the all-time great action films. Before the bell even rang, Bronson Reed comes charging in at Braun Strowman, who dodged him. Reed hits the corner, and the top turnbuckle, it exploded. The top turnbuckle snapped, and we had no top rope anymore. So the match has not even officially begun yet, and we've already lost the top rope. So Reed rolls out to the floor, and when he does, Braun Strowman sees this as an opportunity for the Strowman Express. We're getting the Strowman Express in the first 60 seconds of this match. So Strowman goes outside. He goes to start the train, but the train gets cut off when Reed grabs a fan, a planted fan, out of the crowd and chucks him at his head. He literally used this person as a weapon, and he threw this man, quite literally threw him, at Braun Strowman. So when Strowman finally recovers, Bronson Reed is over by the barricade by the timekeeper's area. And here comes Braun Strowman, and he spears Reed through the timekeeper's barricade, which completely collapses. After this, security, producers, referees, they all lead Reed through the crowd. He's heading to the back. It looks like we're done here. The crowd starts to boo. Braun Strowman is in the ring. He sees this. He goes, no. We're not ending this like this. So he exits the ring. He goes down the aisleway, cuts through the crowd, and he shoulder blocks Bronson Reed over an equipment case, and he takes a bump over the case to the floor. Strowman continues to fight Reed into the backstage area, and he tossed aside a bunch of security geeks who got in his way. There just so happened to be a golf cart there. I don't know why. They just wanted him to have something to flip over. I guess that's what he did. Reached underneath, and he flipped. I mean, that honestly, was that really impressive? We've seen this guy flip over a bus or an ambulance, right? We've seen him flip over things that are five times the size of the golf cart. So it's like he could have just blown at it. Blowed? What the fuck? What am I saying? He could have blown on it, and it would have flipped over. So the golf cart gets flipped over. Reed, though, is now standing on top of an equipment case, and he jumps off onto Braun, who falls backwards and crashes through a table. So this is just pure chaos now, right? I mean, they're tearing up the entire place. And still, we're not done yet. Strowman gets up, and he drives Bronson Reed through the same papier-mâché wall that Chris Jericho drove the forklift through when he killed Samoa Joe. And they go crashing through. And finally, that sent us to the commercial break. This was pure chaos, but honestly, I thought that this was every bit as fun as their first match outside of the fake wall spot, because that looked just as bad as it did on Dynamite. I also used that word match in quotation marks. This time we actually got no match, technically. The bell never rang. We never officially had a match. Last time, at least, we had an actual match for a couple minutes before it spilled out of the ring and out of the building. But that was a ton of fun. I had a lot of fun watching this, too. That's twice now we haven't really gotten much of a match. What we've gotten from these guys is a real-life demolition derby between the two of them. Now, at some point, we're going to have to get a proper match between these two. And I think the match, when we finally get it, is going to be great. You know, these two together, man. I mean, it's just, you know, two guys beating the crap out of each other and tearing up anything that's in their way. They're using people as weapons. They're using actual weapons. They're crashing through things. They're crashing onto things. They're falling off of things. What's not to like? You know, this is a true big man battle here between these two. I don't have an issue with them continuing to milk it like this because, again, what they've been doing so far has been the highlight of the show. Right? I mean, that week that they did that first angle, that was the highlight of the night. This was one of the highlights of Raw tonight, too. So if I had one word to sum this up, it would be fun. Now, Adam Pearce was in his office. He was on the phone after this in the back asking for updates on Reed and Strowman, and he had the terrible referee in his office standing there, the one who did not count the fall for Xavier Woods earlier in the show. I don't know why he was there. They were interrupted by Ludwig Kaiser. And Pierce noted that he had been working on a challenger for Gunther since he doesn't seem to want to accept Sami Zayn's challenge. And he said, Sami, by the way, does make a compelling case. So as they were arguing, Sami Zayn's music hits and he makes his way out to the ring. He talked about being in the ring with Bret the Hitman Hart in Calgary last Monday night. Said that everything he said about Bret being his hero was true. And he recalled Bret talking about what it would take or what it takes to be a champion. Zayn said that all he could think of all week long was that he needs to be the world heavyweight champion. He said that Gunther has repeatedly declined his challenges while claiming that Sami is not on his level. And Sami said that he doesn't believe it, nor does he think Gunther believes it. He said that he thinks in Gunther's head, he remembers being beaten by Sami at WrestleMania this year. And he knows that if he beat him before, he can beat him again. And so he accused Gunther of being scared. Ludwig Kaiser came out. He asked why Sami, of all people, was asking for a championship match. He said Gunther is trying to save Sami from the worst embarrassment of his entire life. He said miracles don't happen twice. Well, I mean, Ric Flair did get struck by lightning twice. So it does happen. Sami found it strange that Kaiser was speaking for Gunther instead of Gunther being out here to speak for himself. He said Gunther doesn't need Kaiser for anything, and he doesn't think that Kaiser needs Gunther either. He said Kaiser wants to get noticed, and that's why he turned on Giovanni Vinci. Can we not invoke the name of Giovanni Vinci? As if the man has not been embarrassed enough. Talk about kicking a man while he's down, reminding everybody about what they did to poor Vinci. I'm not sure which is worse, Imperium turning on Vinci and kicking him to the curb, or Triple H booking Vinci 2 weeks ago on SmackDown. I think what happened to him on SmackDown is far worse. But maybe we should just leave Vinci alone. Sami questioned if Kaiser thought that he would gain respect by being Gunther's mouthpiece. Unlike what I call him last week, his side chick. On Friday, right, they were in the crowd. They were some of the celebrity guests in the crowd for the season premiere. And I think I mistakenly called him his side chick instead of his sidekick. Maybe he would rather be his side chick than his sidekick, because calling him Gunther's sidekick is kind of a slap in the face. So Zayn told Kaiser to have the balls to speak for himself. That brought out the world heavyweight champion. Gunther told Sami that he would answer his challenge in a moment, but first he was addressing Ludwig Kaiser here, and he said that, you have something you want to tell me? And Kaiser said, well, as a matter of fact, there was something that I've been trying to get off my chest for a very long time. And at that point, Kaiser turned and he blasted Sami with a microphone, and Gunther smiled. Kaiser worked over Sami and then held him, while Gunther told Sami that the answer to your challenge to a championship match is and will remain no. And Gunther left the ring. Kaiser was about to leave behind him. Sami, though, reached over and grabbed him by the ankle. And Kaiser set up for a move. Zayn countered into a German suplex and folded him up on the back of his neck. He went to the corner, as did Sami. He came in with the Huluva kick and took down Kaiser. All Gunther could do was just watch from the stage. So another week, another challenge by Sami Zayn rejected. With each passing week, though, I think they're slowly building interest in the eyes of the fans who are going to want to see this match. Every time we get to have Sami Zayn come out and explain to us why he so badly wants to be the world heavyweight champion, why it means so much to him. It's just building interest in this match. It's building people as far as their interest level in wanting to see Gunther accept the challenge, wanting to see this match take place. They've already announced Sammy is going to have a singles match with Ludwig Kaiser on Raw next Monday night. After that, you would have to expect that Gunther would accept the challenge, possibly as early as next week. That match really should take place at Bad Blood. I think that doing that match, you know, maybe on the Raw after Bad Blood as the main event, having it as a TV main event, that should be a PLE match. I'm sorry. You're going to have Gunther defend the World Heavyweight Championship against Sami Zayn, which was a WrestleMania match this year. It needs to be on the Bad Blood card. You want to headline Raw with the Intercontinental title match next week? Fine. But hopefully they're planning on including that match on the Bad Blood card. Then we had the best match in the entire show. This was the other highlight. This in the Strowman and Reed segment, but this right here was the match of the night. Bianca Belair one-on-one with Io Sky. As I said before, I don't think these two have ever had a bad match together. Some are better than others, but never a bad one. None better than the one they had in Puerto Rico last year at Backlash. This was not as good as that, but this one is up there. There was a suicide dive spot late in the match by Io Sky that would have made Darby Allin sit up and go, holy shit. This was very Darby Allin-esque as far as just how reckless it looked. She flew out of the ring, through the ropes, and really took out Bianca, it looked like, with her ass. And it was, I mean, it was a rough bump there. But, I mean, it looked great, but it was scary as all hell. So they were on the steps after this, and Bianca lifted her for a delayed vertical suplex and held her. And slowly marched up the steps, slow marched up the stairs with her in a suplex position. And then she deposited her over the top rope back into the ring. That was very impressive. Bianca went to the top, and she went for a 450 splash, but Io got the knees up. Io then set up for her Genius of the Sky moonsault on top, but before she could execute the move, Bianca sprung to her feet, grabbed her, put her on her shoulders in position for the KOD. On the way down, though, as she was executing the move, Io rolled into a roll-up. She took her over in a roll-up, small package, whatever you want to call it, and she got the pin. Hat tip to Joe Tessitore. I said I was going to put him over later in the stream. This is where I thought he really shined. He really put this over big. I thought his call of the finish and the post-match was great. I thought he did a great job tonight on the whole, but especially here, I thought he was really good. And hat tip to both ladies. You know, they killed it. They had a great match, and it felt like a big win for Io, too, because Bianca doesn't lose very often. Bianca Belair is one of the more protected stars on that WWE roster. If you look at her win-loss record, really overall, but if you look at her win-loss record for this year, and I know she's done a lot of tag team matches mostly, but she's done singles and triple threats. She has a lot more wins than she does losses, okay? She's a lot heavier in the win column than she is in the loss column. So for Io to get a win, even if it was, a fluky roll-up, a win is a win. So it felt like a big deal, and it also sets up damage control now for a tag team championship match, one would think, with Bianca and Jade. That's about the only match that really interests me. When I think of the women's tag team titles and the division, I mean, there really isn't one, but the division, damage control, now they're baby faces, that's the only match that really interests me. And a big part of that is because of the chemistry that Bianca and Io have. Beyond that, I can't say there's any other team, any other combination of teams or match when it comes to those titles that really has any appeal to me whatsoever. In the back, Ilya Dragunov congratulated Jey Uso on his win in their four-way match last week and wished him luck against Bron Breakker. And Jey said, yeet. They bumped fists. Jey left. And as Jey exited stage left, the Judgment Day approached Dragunov. Balor advised him to choose his friends more carefully. He said that he respected Ripley and Priest and Jey. And that was more than he could say about them. And Balor warned him that they would not deliver their message so nicely to him next time. So a Balor versus Dragunov match being teased. Sounds good to me. Damian Priest got the main event spot against Dominic Mysterio. Priest dominated for a while. He set up for a razor's edge. Balor was about to slip into the ring. And so Priest let go like an idiot, and Dom escaped. Priest went after Dominic and threw him back in the ring. As Dom distracted the referee, JD McDonagh distracted Damian Priest. That allowed Finn Balor to shove him into the ring post. And then Dom followed with a suicide dive. After a break, Priest hit a broken arrow. Liv Morgan, though, got Dom's foot on the bottom rope at the last second to break the count, break the pin. Rhea Ripley tackled Liv Morgan at that point over the announce desk. They took a hell of a bump over the desk into Wade Barrett, and they wiped him out. Once Wade was able to get back up and collect himself, he admitted that it did hurt, but he loved it. Well, I'll bet he did. Here comes Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley, and they tackle you to the ground. I mean, Wade's just being honest. So Dominic drop-kicked Priest into the middle rope. He hit a 619. He went up for a frog splash. Priest moved. Dominic rolled through, but then Priest turned him inside out with a clothesline. Then came the South of Heaven chokeslam for the win. He didn't have any time to celebrate, though. He got jumped. He got swarmed by the members of the Judgment Day. They pounced on him. Rhea Ripley got up on the apron and was able to grab a hold of Dom. It was like she was trying to pull him over the top. Liv Morgan, though, yanked her legs out from under her and then sent Rhea shoulder first into the ring steps, put her in the ring. Jey Uso now. Because everybody in the crowd at this point was yeeting, right? Because they knew. Because remember what Jey told Priest earlier in the show. I know you're not going to ask for my help, but I got your back. I'm going to have my eye on your match later in the show. So everybody knew they were waiting for it. And so now here comes the Yeet Man himself, right? And Jey Uso comes out and he's not running to the ring, but he's sort of, you know, he's doing this thing and he's, you know, getting ready to make his way down. And he gets down to ringside and then he just stops very awkwardly. Now I saw this and I thought, okay, that's a little strange, but maybe, you know, he's smart and he sees that he's outnumbered. And so somebody else is about to come out. Maybe Ilya Dragunov, based on the segment that we just saw, right? It would make sense if Dragunov was going to come out. Nope. Nobody came out. Nobody was supposed to come out. Bron Breakker was supposed to spear Jey Uso. He was a little late. Now, eventually, a few seconds later, Bron Breakker, out of nowhere, boom, spears Jey Uso to the ground. Speared the shit out of him. So he was able to get his heat back from earlier in the show. But yeah, that was a little awkward. Because he just stood there. It's like, what's he waiting for? It's like, oh, okay. All right. I see now. Meanwhile, Liv Morgan gave Rhea Ripley an oblivion, while Finn Balor gave Priest the coup de grace off the top. Actually, he stomped him three times. He went up two more times. All while Liv was holding Rhea down, Rhea was like reaching and grabbing a hold of Priest, you know? Both were beaten down. And the Judgment Day stood tall to close the show. I guess what Balor told Dragunov earlier must have really resonated with him. Because, boy, Ilya Dragunov was nowhere to be found. He couldn't give two shits about these people. You would think he would come out and help, but nope. He wasn't coming out there for nothing. But it was a logical angle to do to close out the show, put more heat on the matches, two of the key matches of Bad Blood, Priest and Balor, Rhea and Liv, leave the baby faces laying here. You know, this new version of the Judgment Day, street trash, whatever you want to call them, really needed some credibility. They had a credibility issue coming out of SummerSlam. And they have taken steps the last few weeks to try to remedy that. You know, they've really tried to put a lot of heat on the group. And they have had a couple of different angles now where Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley have been left laying. So I thought it was fine. On the whole, this was a strong show. I thought this was a really good episode. The CM Punk promo was strong, as was the face-off with Uso and Breakker. The Strowman and Reed segment was a lot of fun. The Bianca and Io match, best match of the night, one of the best segments on the entire show. And I even enjoyed the New Day segment. And I can't really say that of late there's been a whole lot to get excited about when it comes to the New Day. You know, but they've got me invested here to see what comes next. I'm telling you, we got to see Big E. We got to see Big E trying to help mend fences here. You probably get a few more segments like this before we get Big E. But within the next month or two, we should see him. And then maybe in the end they'll all make up and we'll get the big scene for the 10-year anniversary. Actually, you know what would be awesome? Now I'm just fantasy booking here. And again, I really don't know. I really don't think that Big E is going to wrestle again. I mean, it would be great if he did. But wouldn't it be something? Wouldn't it be something if we get to the 10-year anniversary in November of the New Day, and Big E maybe has been back for a little bit. He's been trying to mend fences here with Kofi and Woods. And, you know, you think all is well and they hug and they embrace or whatever. And it looks like, you know, they have indeed, you know, mended those fences and everything is copacetic now. And then Big E just like fucking destroys the two of them. He just like, he got silently cleared. And they kept it a big secret, and he just fucking just destroys the two of them. Like, you two fucking bastards. Like, you've taken what we built here, and you've ruined it. You've sullied it. I've lost the last 2 years of my career, 3 years, whatever it's been. And he just destroys them. We get, like, Big E, monster Big E back. Like, medically cleared and ready to come back and kick ass. It'd be nice. I don't know that that's going to happen, but it would be nice. What did you think of Raw? From Portland, 86.5% thumbs up for tonight's show compared to 13.5% thumbs down. I'd say that's a thumbs up show, wouldn't you? I'd say that looks pretty damn good. Let's get into your super chats. I know, wishful thinking. It's a fun idea to think about. What a swerve that would be, though. Right? What a swerve that would be. Big E is just, you know, street clothes or in a suit or whatever because he did the fucking pre-show. Let's say they do a segment at Survivor Series, like on the PLE. You know, and Big E's in his suit or tuxedo because he was just on the pre-show. Now he's in the ring. He's trying to bring them back together. And it's like, all right, we're all back. Everybody now is clapping and all happy. And that smile just like turns to like a stoic expression and like, fucking double clotheslines them, rips the suit off, pecs are popping, right? Big ending to Kofi, big ending to Woods, goes outside, rips the lid off the announce desk, clears it off. I mean, just what a swerve. What a swerve it would be. You know what, though? I don't think they would want to do it, though. I really don't. I think those guys would like to go through their career without doing a full-fledged, like, proper breakup. The fact that they've been together for 10 years is incredible. I was trying to think of like another faction in wrestling. And I'm not talking about factions. You've had like the Horsemen and like different factions that have had different members. I'm talking about the same members that have been together for that long, like consecutively that many years. I can't think of another group. What other faction has been together consistently for 10 years? Without a heel turn or a breakup or different versions. Like, I can't think of another one. It's historic. You know, the run that they've been on. Oh, David. David. I'm gonna get to yours in a bit. We had a few that came in before David, so I want to make sure I start with those first. All right, let's go to your super chats here. Smoking Dried Chicken. We'll start with you, brother. You were the first one in with the $5 one earlier tonight. Smoking Dried Chicken says, McIntyre and Punk should end with Punk giving McIntyre a belly-to-belly off the cage. Both of them crashing down on the announce table. No contest. Well, if you do that, I think that my CM Punk counter will surely reset back to zero. The injury counter. So let's not do that. Prince Vegeta, 95 with the 999. I saw a report last week that after the Drew Punk feud is over, Drew is going to feud with Uncle Howdy. Don't know how you feel, but I don't want McIntyre jobbing to Bo Dallas after losing the Punk feud. Yeah, I don't either. I'd rather ship Drew off to SmackDown, frankly. I think that would be the better way to go. LC Killer 17, how to book a Dominic Mysterio, how to book Dominic as a babyface? I mean, there's any number of ways you can go about doing it. It's not like there's only one way to do it. Every great heel has a great babyface run in them. Dominic will have his day. That day should not be now. He still gets incredible heat. Smoking Dry Chicken, in my opinion, Jade and Bianca really bring the best out of Damage Control, especially Io and Kairi. The chemistry feels great and fresh on TV. I don't know about Kairi, but Bianca and Io have great chemistry in the ring together. LC Killer, I was a sophomore in high school when the New Day started. Wow. See? I mean, look at this, man. Think about what was going on in wrestling or what was going on in the world 10 years ago, right? I was on Bourbon Street celebrating Daniel Bryan's championship win after WrestleMania. That's what I was doing 10 years ago. 10 years ago, Brock Lesnar was savaging John Cena at SummerSlam. Same year that the New Day formed. There might be some people who are watching this right now who weren't even wrestling fans at the time. They've never been a wrestling fan during a period where the New Day wasn't a thing. That's how long the New Day has been around. Number one Ricky fan, Fire Panda. Thank you for the $4. Brother Fluff Salisbury with the $5. I believe in the monster, he says. But sadly, currently all my money goes to my two kids' colleges. You're going to give money to your kids, not to the monster? What's wrong with you? DEH Sires, to think that Vince had Io in two tryout main event matches and didn't see anything in her, and instead called up Aaliyah. How did we survive Vince? You know, I had forgotten about that. I believe that's accurate. He saw more in Aaliyah than he did in Io. The great Vince McMahon, everybody. Prince Vegeta, every time I hear a Def Rebel song now, I think of Hesh from The Sopranos, and I say, that's not a hit. God, I haven't heard a Hesh reference. I don't think ever. Still a sad thing what they did to his wife. Ian Gomes, after a busy weekend and long day since moving to Denver and getting a new job, it is nice to relax and watch some Solomonster for a change. Well, Ian, congrats on the new gig. I hope it is a well-paying gig. Thank you, brother. And now we can get to our boy, David. Now we're all caught up on the early ones. David Thiering got us started tonight before I even said a word. With $300 in Super Chat. That's two 150s. We were singing the song, man. Not once, but twice. That's special. It's a very catchy tune, though, you have to admit. But David says, I read David's first one already. Hope you were well and had a good weekend. I'm having a better day now, David, thanks to you. So thank you, brother. Thank you very much, Julian Shaw Rugby, with the $9.99. Hey, Grant, thank you. Julian says, I attended the show tonight and felt the Portland crowd, usually fairly mild, really lifted their game. Did that come across on TV? Yeah, I think it did. I would say on the whole, it was a pretty lively crowd. Been listening since the TV tracks day. Solo will always be number one in my book, Julian. Thank you, brother. TV tracks, that's going back a ways. I smoke a lot of weed. 500 likes for Be the Booker, 1,000 for double Be the Booker. Well, no, we're definitely not going to hit that goal tonight. Right now, I would say the goal, I think 500 is a good goal. We're at 443 right now. All right. If we don't hit 500, you can blame I smoke a lot of weed. We're going to make 500 the goal. Number one, Ricky Fan Fire Panda. So normally you have 50-50 chance of winning, but when you face a genetic freak, you've got a 25% chance at best. Now what happens when you add Kurt Angle to the mix? Oh, your chances drastic go down. That's what happens. Drastic. Jake Jones with the 49.99. And by the way, Fire Panda with the 51. Holy shit. Thank you. If I didn't say that already, I'll say it now. And then we go from 51 to 50 with Jake Jones. It's not a party without Jake Jones and Gunther. This is like the unlikeliest friendship that I've ever seen. Jake and Gunther have become best friends. I like it, though. Jake, thank you. Jerome Eugenio, when Def Rebel Contracts ends, I hope they take their music with them. So you just want to get rid of all the Def Rebel music? You know, like Roman, LA Knight. LA Knight has a new mix now. But that's Def Rebel too. So even the good stuff. You want to get rid of the good stuff too. Fire Panda, hey look, it's Samoa Bro. Yes, indeed. Paul Carpenter, seriously, did Tiffany Stratton have face surgery? Her cheeks are popping out of her face. She's starting to look like Rocky, Rocky Dennis. Somebody said something about her cheeks the other... I didn't notice it on SmackDown, but somebody the other day said something about her cheeks so that it looked like Jigsaw from the Saw... the Saw movies, like the cheeks. I think she looks fine. I think she looks fine. Eminem with the 25. It's a party now. I gotta show some love on the stream. Solo, you are the man. Question. With the Cody and Roman versus Solo and Fatu match of Bad Blood, could we see either KO or Orton attacking Cody and Roman? No, I don't think they're going to attack Cody and Roman, but I said on the podcast this weekend that the match has basically created a pathway to get to Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton, or to get to a heel turn for Owens and or Orton. But it has created a pathway for Cody's next feud. Because if we don't have Randy Orton and Kevin Owens coming out on SmackDown this Friday and trying to talk to Cody and say, hey, what the fuck? Like, you're teaming with Roman? You're going to stand next to this guy and team with the guy that's made our lives a living hell for the last 4 years? Randy Orton. 18 months on the shelf. Gone. Because of the bloodline. Kevin Owens screwed over constantly by Roman Reigns and the bloodline. Like, why wouldn't they be upset about that? They have to call Cody out on that. That right there should be the trigger for whatever Cody is going to be doing coming out of Bad Blood. That's my hope. As far as them attacking Cody and Roman in Bad Blood, I don't see them attacking Cody and Roman. Cody maybe afterwards, but not Cody and Roman. Although, you know, if they did, you could do Cody and Roman against Orton and Owens, but nah, I don't think that's the play. Power Spying Games with the $2. In case you missed it, P. Diddy got arrested tonight, as per TMZ. Yes, I did. I did see that. WrestleMania celebrity guest from WrestleMania 29. P. Diddy. Puff Daddy. POS. Call him whatever you want. He is now behind bars. Apparently, they were going to wait until tomorrow, and they were going to arrest him. And for whatever reason, they decided to move early. I don't know if they thought he was going to flee. I have no idea. His lawyer says he just moved to New York in preparation for being taken into custody. You didn't have to do this. That's what every lawyer says. So, yeah, they got Diddy. I hope Vince is paying attention. Wouldn't it be nice if he was next on the feds list? Maybe he'll share a cell with P. Diddy. Wouldn't that be something? Alfonso. Io and Bianca were the best thing on Raw. Talented women that are given time can make magic happen. If only they were fighting for something more than the tag team title. Solo, I love you. I acknowledge you. Thank you, Alfonso. Your acknowledgement has been noted. Hisco, still waiting for that. I love you, Solo. Super chat. We not only want it, we need it. You know, I was looking for a good one that Jacob said. I couldn't find a good one. The closest I found, it was from a video package, and there was music in the background, so. I'm trying to find a clean version that he himself said. Eminem, time to cut the tree down. From David Thiering to ABK, we got the best crew in the chat. If there's a heel turn for Bianca and Jade, could we see Twisted Bliss reunite and challenge for the tag team titles? I don't see that happening, no. Well, but you know what? When I say that I don't see it happening, I don't see Bianca and Jade going heel. Could I see Alexa and Nikki as a team? You know, if Alexa was to end up in the Wyatt Six, then yeah, we could actually get a Twisted Bliss reunion. But I don't see... Not with Bianca and Jade going heel. That's not going to happen. Oofman Entertainment, they are going to split the New Day. What about all these Old Spice commercials that they are in? Well, they're not splitting anything right now. They're just teasing it. They're not going to split them until they get to the anniversary first. J.R. Becher. I think the last sleep that Punk got when he was using groceries with those bags below his eyes. AJ needs to use his finisher on him. Yeah, he looked rough, but that was kind of by design, I think. Oh boy. Look who just dropped 20 more gifted memberships. Holy shit.
Too sweet to be sour. It's Silver Tower.
He has struck again. That is 40 for the night from Silver Tower. I could be wrong here, but I want to say Silver Tower actually holds the all-time record for, I think, 100 in a single night. But, wow, we have got 40 new members just from Silver Tower alone. Marianne was gifted a membership. John Jay was gifted a membership. Guerrilla Tactics. Look at the sea of green that we have got going on here. My, oh my. Silver Tower, you are awesome, man. Well, you'd have to be, I guess, to have your own sound effect. Thank you, brother. Nick Grasso. With the 1999, that's right. Oh, use your emojis now. You guys have emojis now. Nick Grasso with the 1999. The latest Wyatt 6 QR codes read, when she speaks, mountains should tremble. It's waiting for her. I can only open the door. She must choose to walk through. I think that is a tease for Alexa Bliss. There you go. Could very well be. Again, I showed you the website. I didn't have time to go through everything. I'm in the middle of trying to review a fucking television show. That's why I outsourced the QR code stuff to you guys to comb through and let me know if there is anything that I missed. So that does sound to me like it could be for an Alexa Bliss return. I guess we'll find out soon enough. How long are we going to wait before this... before this woman comes back? I feel like it's been teased for so long. I feel like there have been hints and teases now for months and months and months. What are they waiting for? What's going on here? Nick says the other QR code was, the bond of a family is a cat of nine tails, bound through suffering. We see you, brother. When you need us, we will be there. I think this one is for Braun Strowman. Thank you, Nick. Jeremy Rose, when is USA / WWE going to stop censoring the fans? They're not. The audio muting, which I believe is what you are referring to, is here to stay. On Netflix, though, we shouldn't have to worry about that. Alex with the 10. Brother Solo, with some of the biggest names like Cody and Okada having some creative freedom in their storyline, should they still be held accountable if their booking is bad? I mean, I don't hold wrestlers accountable so much for bad creative because we have no idea, especially in WWE. In WWE, they might be a little looser as far as allowing people to contribute ideas and, you know, maybe try to shape some of their creative direction. But I still think largely the creative direction in WWE is set by people like Paul Levesque and Bruce Pritchard. And it's one thing to criticize someone's performance in a storyline, whether it's a match or a promo. And I think that's fair game. I'm not going to sit here and say, man, this story sucks, and so it's the wrestler's fault. Because in WWE, they have a creative team there, and that's their responsibility. If there's a bad storyline, I generally don't kind of hold it against the actual talent themselves. In AEW, it's a little bit harder because I feel like there is more freedom in AEW. But again, who has what level of creative power? We don't know. We don't know. Nobody knows for sure. So it's hard to judge. Is Okada booking his own angles in AEW? I don't think he is. It's probably Tony Khan. That maybe Okada with his boys, the Bucks, right? Because they're like this. And they are EVPs. I'm not saying they have no feedback as far as who they're feuding with. But I mean, as far as the week-to-week creative, again, they have people who are in charge of this stuff. And when it's good, you can give them praise. When it's bad, you can criticize. I can't lay it at the feet of the talent entirely because I have no idea what level of creative freedom they have. You know, in WWE, I still look at Paul Levesque. In AEW, I look at Tony Khan. The buck stops there. They get the credit. They take the blame. Smoking dried chicken, Michelle. Candice Michelle. Michelle McCool. Oh, Michelle. Thank you. We have got Avwunu. Ogenetega. Sure, I butchered that. I hope not. What do you do with Dom after the Rhea feud? I fear Judgment Day is going to be main eventing on main event. Now under GWO Learning Tree. One thing I can tell you is that you don't have to worry about them being relegated to main event. But when the Rhea stuff is over, I could see a Judgment Day Wyatt 6 program. I think that may be next for them once this runs its course. Prince Vegeta, I agree they should send Drew to SmackDown after all. After all, he does hold a pin over Cody. He beat him in February. His dad's very astute. That's true. He's got a win over Cody Rhodes. You can build an entire program around that. Grant Hudson with the $9.99. Salute to Tito Jackson, who passed away yesterday. Had he not broke Joe's bass guitar string, there may not have been a Jackson 5, Michael, or Janet. Rest well, Tito. Yes, I believe he was 70. Right? I don't know if they announced the cause of death, but I think he was 70 years old. Jarrett Rodriguez. Where are we on the likes, by the way? Jarrett says, rank these three based on how untrustworthy their characters are. Kevin Owens, Jake Roberts, and Edge. I would say Jake, heel Jake, would be the most untrustworthy, and then Kevin Owens, and then Edge. That's how I would rank them. Fire Panda, I just noticed the most beautiful title belt in wrestling behind you. God bless the sound off title, and God bless you for putting it up. There it is. It's one of those nights. I had to bust it out, the skull belt. See here, like in this image here, it looks so tiny, but it's gigantic. It's a big belt. So every now and then I pop it up on the wall there, and it doesn't really do it justice. It is a beautiful belt. It's a silver belt. Like, you know, the other championship is obviously, a gold replica. This one is silver, but the colors on it and everything and the silver plating, I think it looks great. Jarrett says, I refuse to believe that no one backstage has talked to Shayna, Zoe, and Sonya about how stupid their name sounds. Maybe they don't want to hurt their feelings. I think I'm going to call it Pure Fusion Garbage Collection from now on. Phil Dog, Kurt Angle said he is willing to manage Chad Gable and the rest of American Made. I hope that happens. I think that would be cool. Devin from NJ with the $4.99. Buy or sell, better punch to Vince. Brett after the screw job or Undertaker at Judgment Day 2000. Brett after the screw job, of course. Supposedly took him straight up off his feet. Lifted him off the ground. Wish I could have been there to see it. Jeremy Rose, what do you think the Lucha Bros will initially do when they come to WWE? Tag team feud, singles feud, or LWOBS? Put them on Raw. Let them beat the Judgment Day to win the tag team titles. I mean, sticking them or aligning them in some way with the LWO would obviously be the sort of thing WWE would do. But don't scoff at it. I mean, I could see that happening because in their eyes, Rey Mysterio is this huge star. Rey Mysterio is like the face of the LWO. And they might want to give them some rub by having them associated with Rey Mysterio. And honestly, there's nothing wrong with that. But to just relegate them as just a couple of LWO guys would be a waste. But if Finn Balor and JD McDonagh are going to be the tag team champions for a while, because clearly Sami Zayn and Jey Uso, they've moved away from that idea that they might win the belts. Fuck it. Bring in the Lucha Bros and let them beat the Judgment Day and win the tag team titles. Because they're not coming in and winning the tag team belts from the Bloodline. They'd have a better chance against the Judgment Day. Wasn't Brett naked when he punched Vince? I think so. That's what makes it so much better. When you try to picture that. What a scene, right? I would hope he had a towel on at least. Smoking Dried Chicken, The Rock wants to hold your title belt. Well, he can't have it. The Rock wants to hold my title. He'll have to come ring my doorbell. Boney. How is Main Event still a thing? I never hear about media rights with it like the other shows. I see Level Up over Main Event. I'm pretty sure they have international rights for Main Event. But it's on Peacock. You know, it's on Peacock. It probably has some international clearances. It must make them some money, you know, to keep it going. They're making something off of it. Warhawk Rambo. Who bullshits more, Hulk Hogan or Frank? I don't know who that is, but I can tell you right now, Hulk Hogan is the answer. The man lies like he breathes. Ain't nobody going to beat Hulk Hogan. People like Bischoff and Pritchard, they probably come close, but it's going to be very hard to top Hogan in the bullshit department. You don't want to use a bullshit meter with him either because you'll break it. Anyway, we have achieved. Be the Booker. I said you guys can hit 500, and guess what? We just passed 500, so give yourselves a golf clap. Thank you very much for helping me get there. And right now, let's go ahead and be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Time to be the booker, brother. Brother Jack Dude.
Why is Solomonster a punk hater? Why does he hate punk so much?
It's like my head's on Priest's body.
What did he ever do to him?
It looked like my head was on Damian Priest's body. My biceps have never looked that good. Look at that. Look at that. I was all tatted up there. All right. Look at this. The world's greatest tag team. Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. Kicking us off here in tag team, Be the Booker. Former tag team champions. They were a great team. World's greatest tag team and the Gorillas of Destiny. Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. This is Bullet Club G.O.D. This is old school Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. Got to give that the bell. That would have been a great New Japan match. Send the world's greatest tag team to New Japan Pro Wrestling. Wrestle Bullet Club. All right, women's time. It's Mighty Molly, everybody. The superhero herself, Mighty Molly. Remember the Molly go-round? Molly, by all accounts, one of the nicest, sweetest people. Probably way too nice and way too good and pure-hearted to ever be in the wrestling business. But I believe she's still backstage right now with WWE as an agent. Working with the women, so... Not a bad person to learn from. I remember her back from her days as Mona. Remember Ms. Mona? Ms. Madness, whatever she was when she was with the Macho Man in WCW? Mighty Molly and Alicia Fox. Ah, who am I kidding? You didn't really think I was going to think on that, did you? I mean, I like Molly, but not that much. Oh, well, they can't all be winners. So now it comes down to this. We have the tiebreaker. Remember the other night? Friday night was wild, man. I mean, Friday night was wild for a lot of reasons, but it was like stipulation mania that we kept landing on Friday. It was like, okay, we got one stip, and then it's like, all right, we're finally going to finish this, and now it takes us in a different direction. But maybe we can close the book here on a very simple main event. Oh, God. No. This is the Painmaker. Chris Jericho. This is quite the image. This is in here to pop me every single time we land on it. The Painmaker. Chris Jericho. Oh, man. The Painmaker, Chris Jericho, going to be taking on the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. You know what, though? At the end of the day, it is still Ted DiBiase and Chris Jericho. So, of course, I'm going to give that the bell. Devin says, it's a pain watching him wrestle. Oh, man. What has happened to Jericho? Devin from New Jersey, buy or sell. Better famous actor to be on The Shield, Glenn Close or Forrest Whitaker? Forrest Whitaker is awesome, but Glenn Close was a big get for them. And she was a bigger star than him, at least at that time. So Glenn Close. Yeah, they brought her in as the captain for season 4. I'll see you guys tomorrow night. Over on JD's channel for TNT and back here live Wednesday night for the Dynamite review. Take care, guys.